confidence. So then I took it to like the mentors and a few industry people who I knew. I said, I'm going to go ambient. And they said, you're making a huge mistake. All the growth is in fresh. All the innovation is in chill. There's nothing happening in ambient. Why would you position yourself there? You're just going to get lost. It's going to be a huge failure. And I said, thanks, but I don't believe you. I'm going to do it. Mm. And so from that point on, the whole game changed.
Hello and welcome to episode 22 of the Entrepreneur Experiment podcast. I'm your host, Gary Fox. For those of you listening for the first time, where have you been? But the Entrepreneur Experiment podcast is a weekly business podcast where I sit down and chat to some of Ireland's most interesting entrepreneurs. This week, I had the privilege to sit down and have a coffee with Shane Ryan, founder of Feed. Shane has a very interesting and unusual backstory in the fact that he was actually part of the management team of some of the world's most interesting hotels. He spent his early career traveling around the world, Beijing and the Middle East and America, setting up and founding some of the world's most famous hotels. It's a really unusual chat, and we talk a lot about the high points, but also more the low points of being an entrepreneur. It's not all glamour. I love having very honest conversations with entrepreneurs like this, as often entrepreneurship can be glamorized into something when it's actually quite a tough journey and it's more of a calling than an option. Shane just couldn't let go of a brilliant business idea he had, and he spent the guts of 4 to 5 years just trialing and failing, exactly what the Entrepreneur Experiment is all about, just niggling away at that idea, trying to get it exactly right. And he's absolutely nailed it this time with Feed. It's a really revealing conversation. So grab a coffee yourself, sit down, and just enjoy this very honest chat with Shane. I'll see you next Thursday at 6 a.m. for episode 23. Talk to you then. Shane, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks very much.
We've had an interesting chat up to now. We might circle back at the end and chat about some of your adventures in the last couple of weeks.
I think we're okay. We're done with that.
Yeah. Tell us where you are now in terms of your journey with Feed.
Where am I right now? Tired? The overarching emotion.
So bring us back to when it started, actually.
Yeah.
We were chatting briefly off air about, you know, you're only 7 months
Just seven.
But in reality, there's probably a lot behind that.
It's
so when did it actually start?
It's a 4-year overnight success. It's been a 4-year journey to get to this point, I guess. Within that, there's 3 separate businesses, but all trying to solve the same problem. The first 2 didn't work for a number of different reasons. And now the 3rd go of it is working, thank God. To take it way, way back.
Yeah, take us right back to the start.
The origin stories.
Yeah.
Once upon a time. You know, this idea of entrepreneurs being born and not made. So I'm not saying that that's true, but I think it's very true for myself in that I was the kid who used to set up a stall outside the gates of the house and sell random shite to people. I always wanted to create stuff and sell things. And since I was 5 or 6, I wanted to build something and to work for myself. And I suppose fast forward when I was getting a little bit older, filling out the CAO form, I was fascinated by the hospitality industry. I had a summer job down in Westlair every summer since I was 15, working in a hotel there. And I loved like creating experiences for people and kind of putting smiles on people's faces. And I loved what the industry stood for. And so I had two aunts and an uncle who work in the industry and have been really successful now, are probably the hardest working people that I know, but have been rewarded for that now. And I kind of was inspired by that and wanted to maybe follow their footsteps. So I studied in Shannon College Hotel Management there, the fine institution in Shannon Airport, which I think for me was a really good grounding in professionalism, if that makes sense.
So you went there from school straight in?
Yeah. So I went there when I was 18. That was basically a business school, but everything you're learning is referenced back to hospitality industry and hotel operations. So you're studying like accounting, economics, strategic management, all the normal stuff that you would do in a business or commerce degree. But then you're also doing like the practical elements, like learning how to make a bed, sit in the kitchen, service, that kind of stuff. But you're also wearing a suit every day.
In so, college.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, like at the time, it was a kind of a bone of contention for all these like obnoxious 18-year-olds, we had to show up at 8 o'clock every day for a uniform inspection for see if our tie was tied correctly, and they checked our fingernails to see if they were clipped and clean
every day.
They ran a comb up our cheek sometimes to make sure that we were clean shaven. It was real preparation for
military
high end hospitality
in
the kind of Swiss vein.
Gotcha.
For me, it was actually the single best thing that I could have done, because it kind of afforded me this opportunity to travel, and I was obsessed with seeing the world. I sort of, when I was in my second year, I lived in Germany for a year. Then I went to Malta, the States, Beijing in China, and lastly in Abu Dhabi, always in kind of internship roles, except when it was in the Middle East, was my first real job.
Okay. So you go there for what, 6 months and work, or how did it work?
Yeah, it depends. Germany was a year, Malta was 4 months, the States was 4 months, okay. Beijing was a year, a little bit over a year, and then I moved internally with the company to the Middle East to open a bloody amazing property there, like a temple to marble on the ocean.
Where was that?
In Abu Dhabi.
Okay.
It was brand new property, so I was kind of was part of the pre-opening team. So we went in there, set up all the systems, and then ran it for the first year.
As an aspiring entrepreneur, I say that was
interesting.
Yeah,
it was actually, that experience was the catalyst that led me to say, I don't want to do this anymore. I want to start a business.
Interesting.
Because I was working 90 hours a week, 6 days a week, sometimes every day.
Really?
And I was thinking to myself, I'm not as into this anymore. Okay. I don't think that is...
You must have still quite young at that age.
23.
Wow, okay. Yeah. That's early to realize that.
I was 23, but I was managing 32 people. I was the youngest member of the management team. I shouldn't have been there at all. I still don't know why they chose me. I'm afraid to ask. But I got the job, thankfully, because it was a real learning experience for me. And I was thrown in the deep end, and they were a really great group of managers who I learned a lot from. But I think more, I actually learned a lot about myself there. I think the breaking point was I was working a lot, and I lost myself a lot in that experience, because I didn't have a lot of friends because I was working a lot.
Yeah.
And I was a short-tempered, a bit grumpy. I was wrecked.
Gordon Ramsay-esque.
A little bit. No. I wouldn't go that far, actually. I'm a really nice guy. But sometimes, yeah, I was not myself. All right. So,
but you're living in a strange place as well. That must have been extremely tough, because then when you're not working, you've nothing to bind you.
Yeah, the environment is different. But it was a totally different experience. And everything up to that point, I was an intern, right? So I was there learning.
Yeah,
I was obviously working, but I was there learning.
The pressure was less.
There was targets. There was a lot more pressure on me, and I wasn't doing those things that I need to do to maintain like a solid mental health. So I wasn't eating right. I wasn't eating at all. Right. I was working from morning until evening. So I was grazing off buffets and that kind of thing. Not prioritizing food. I wasn't sleeping properly. And I wasn't doing any sort of fitness at all. So that can turn you into a miserable fucker if that happens.
You're describing the life of nearly every entrepreneur then.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm having flashbacks here of like periods of my life. Yeah.
It's something I'm very aware of now. Because I'm, again, in another very high-pressure, by choice, right? But it's another high-pressure role. But I put a lot of emphasis on doing the things that will enable me to do my best at work now.
Yeah.
How I wrap things up in the Middle East is I was on the phone with my parents one night. I just said to them, listen, I'm really struggling right now with this role, with myself. And my father actually said, like, I can tell from our last few conversations, you really seem a little bit off. We're getting a little bit worried about you. And I kind of went into more details about what was going on. And he, in true my father fashion, sent me a follow-up email the next day with bullet points.
I love this.
Like an action plan. Get Shane back on track.
Wow.
So it was basically like, eat better. Start eating real food. Like I might actually, up until I was 23, I didn't eat any vegetables.
Really?
Yeah. When I was younger, I used to throw the vegetables on the ground under the table and just to avoid them. I wasn't into them at all. And now
until you were 23?
Yeah. Now I run a vegan food company.
I know. I was going to say, like, this is full circle.
Yeah, the transformation. Left.
What did your dad, just follow up on that, how did he just emails you?
Well, Well, we talked about this stuff on the phone.
Okay.
And then he said, just to reiterate our phone call, this is what's going to happen, because you're not going to be good to anyone if you're miserable.
That's amazing. Does he work in that industry?
No,
does he work in development?
Bloody great man.
That's class.
Yeah, he's really, really supportive and very, very much out for our welfare, if that makes sense, making sure that we feel good. I think it drives him mental that I started a business.
Really?
Yeah, because it's...
I thought you were going to say he had his own business and the way he followed up
on
that.
No, not at all. Neither of my parents are entrepreneurs or work for themselves. So that's why I think it's a thing you're born with, rather than...
Okay.
I wasn't inspired by them in any way. Now I have uncles and aunts and people around me that have had businesses, but my parents are risk averse, incredibly hardworking, but I think quite risk averse in that sense. But so out of that action plan came sleep better, eat better, and start doing something active to take your mind off work a little bit. And I started eating vegetables for the first time in my life. And
eyes opened.
Very quickly, I was like, Jesus, the transformative effects of eating actual green food and vegetables. And I was hooked at that point. I was like, holy shit, I could not believe that something so simple could completely lift the fog. And I'm not saying it was that, it was a combination of things, but it was this one, it was just, for me, what jumped out.
Did you follow a specific diet, or you just started eating better?
Just ate meals. Because at that point, I was just grazing stuff. Like, I wasn't actually eating things. I didn't have time, or I thought I didn't have time to eat. So this was to 2014, maybe. Anyway, it was a while ago. And it was just when, like, healthy eating was becoming trendy and interesting. I was lucky that I was traveling a lot, and I could see kind of healthy restaurants and healthy concepts popping up everywhere. And I was like, God, you know what? I've got no responsibilities. I'm not married. I have no mortgage. I have no bills. I have no debts. Now is the perfect time to do it, to take a chance and start something, if that's what I ultimately want to do. And so the idea was that it's basically what Sprout do now. You know, Sprout and Chopped and Staple Foods. It was that kind of a model.
I routinely go over there and drop like 11 or 12 euro on a salad.
Exactly. Yeah. You got to pay for quality, though.
Yeah, that's true. I always say it every day. I'm like, I'm going back to meal prepping. I am going back tomorrow to meal prepping. Yeah, and I never do.
Life happens.
And I never do.
Yeah, thankfully, because we also sell convenience.
Exactly. We link in the bio.
So that was the kind of that was the plan. And
you've seen that in the Middle East.
Yeah,
and there
was nothing.
You've seen that bubbling up.
Yeah, and I'd been home and I thought, there's nothing happening in Ireland right now. I think it's restaurant operation was my thing. I'd always run front of house. My last role in the Middle East, I was running a Gary Rhodes restaurant. So he's a Michelin star.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Michelin star chef when I was the manager there. So I thought I could definitely do this. And I love people. And so I floated the idea again on another phone call to my parents. And they were like, that sounds great. But if you're coming home and moving into this house, you have to be serious about this. So you need to pitch it to us.
Mm.
You need to put your ideas down on paper and write like a one-page business plan to show us, to prove to us that you're serious.
Your parents said.
Yeah, because, well, they had a point. They said, like, when you turned 18, you're out the door. And if you're saying you're going to move back in here and disrupt our beautiful lives.
They just got rid of it.
Yeah,
they're
exactly.
Just enjoying their life again.
Yeah. So I did that, and they said, okay, sounds like you've thought this through. I moved home. I studied business in college, and I studied business in school, and the way I taught you start a business is you write a business plan.
Mm.
So I set up a desk in my room, in my family home, and I wrote a business plan. I spent 9 months writing a business plan.
Wow, okay.
Beautiful piece of work.
Oh, amazing. Formatted, the brilliant
109 pages.
109?
Diagrams, tables, floor plans of potential...
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I went really deep into this stuff.
But you'd taken probably five-star mentality and then applied
that. I think that's actually a flaw in my personality, and I really want to go into the detail of stuff, and it does hold me back even to this day, and I'm very aware of it. But I was also a little bit afraid of taking the actual leap.
Yep.
Do you know what I mean?
It's lovely. It's great sitting there coming up with all these great ideas. Oh, look, we all do it,
And I was really young, not a lot of experience, nothing in business. And so I started kind of looking for units in Dublin City, and it was just when the economy was turning around. Mm, so anyone
just
with,
started
anyone with a bit of cash was opening up a healthy restaurant.
Mm.
And I was coming along with no experience. I didn't have €500,000 on the bank account. I had 15. Mm. So I didn't end up getting any sort of units. And
so your idea was it had to be unit based, retail based, customer facing.
That's what I thought.
Okay.
Yeah, and then I slowly realized that wasn't going to happen because I didn't have the bank balance to do it, to execute it.
At what point did you realize that was when you were doing the plan? Or?
No, after I finished the plan.
Okay.
After I finished it, and I'd done like start your own business course, all this kind of stuff, and then I said, okay, I need a little bit of help here. So I went and I studied a postgrad in UCD in innovation and entrepreneurship.
A friend of mine did that, yeah.
Fantastic course.
Mm, I've heard good things,
really amazing. I have a lot of time for those people. It just opens your eyes to approaching problems in a completely innovative way.
Mm.
And what it did for me was prove that I didn't need this bricks and mortar restaurant to deliver on what the solution that I wanted to give to people, which was effectively convenient plant-based food. And I suppose it mirrored my own problem in that I can't cook. I don't know if I mentioned that.
No.
So I'm a complete,
that's a bit of a bombshell.
Yeah, so I'm a complete plot twist.
Restaurant manager, hotel manager.
Yeah. So I am obsessed with food, right? So I spend all my money on food.
Okay.
I love to eat.
Just eating it.
I'm just not into cooking. So it's not my thing. And so I was looking for like convenient meals and I couldn't find them that were like healthy, natural, convenient, easy, and didn't cost a fortune.
Mm.
So I said, okay, a restaurant in the cloud sounds sexy.
Mm.
Very on trend.
It's so on trend.
Yeah.
So on trend. Yeah. Dark kitchens. Yeah,
exactly.
So on trend.
But I mean, like, this was about 3 years ago, maybe.
That's very early. Like, they're only kind of bubbling up now.
Yeah.
I've started reading a lot of articles about it recently. I think there's an accelerator in London now just for dark kitchens.
Yeah. And Deliveroo are going hard as well in London and New York.
For anyone not familiar, actually, just explain what that is, that concept.
A dark kitchen?
Yeah.
It's basically a small mini kitchen in an area where you're going to get lots of orders, but doesn't have a consumer facing element. And so you set up your kitchen and then you just deliver through one of the third party apps like Deliveroo or Just Eat or something like that. I don't know if that's the dictionary definition, but that's my understanding.
It's because it's only starting to come out now. And I think probably people wouldn't be too familiar with it, but I think it's going to be absolutely.
Yeah, they do. I think they do like containers. They do container kitchens like that in London, or I saw them somewhere. But it's really interesting because delivery now is massive.
Yeah.
And when I started, so I was so anxious to do something. I actually started the business while I was still on the course.
Okay. So you started, so this was back 2014, 2015.
Yeah.
Did the course, and then you started your business out of that.
Yeah. So it was called Feed, F-E-E-D.
F-E-E-D.
Which was the name, was going to be the name of the fast casual restaurant. And the idea was it was a restaurant in the cloud, and I made one thing on the menu, and you ordered it before 11. A different thing every day, you ordered it before 11 a.m.
Oh, yeah.
And I delivered it by bicycle to your office before 1.
Okay.
In an ideal world.
Okay.
And so I set up a beautiful website, beautiful branding. I sublet a kitchen for just the morning hours in Drumcondra. I had an app on the App Store.
Oh, wow.
Now it was like a white label solution. It was really great. It was a really great solution at the time. And I launched it. And I had a chef developed the recipes for me.
Yeah.
How my day worked was that I would get up at 4 a.m. in the morning, cycle. I was living in Rathmines. I cycled from Rathmines to Smithfield Market, picked up all the ingredients, cycled up to Drumcondra, cooked all this food, but I can't cook.
So you were the chef as well?
That's everything.
This is very familiar to James. This is James McCormack from the Barista Baron from last week, actually. Very similar story to him. He started just by accident. He had to get propelled. So you were cooking. So a chef had given you like the plans?
And the recipes and how to make it. And then I was making it myself every morning.
Wow.
And then I was because the orders were open until 1 o'clock, I didn't, or until 11, I didn't know how many to make. So I made like an estimate or a forecast.
I was going to ask you, how many did you make?
In hindsight now, there was so many problems with that business, but I just wanted to do something.
Yeah, get started.
Yeah, I was hungry. literally, and and so I'd make all the food, then I'd collate the orders and make like a route. I had a bicycle, and I bought this cargo bike.
Okay. You see all the four moms cycling them around Sandy Mount now.
Yeah, so mine was basically twice the size of that.
Okay.
And on the front of it was a fridge. So I was cycling all around. You have no idea how many hills are in Dublin City until you're pushing, cycling
a fridge
up the hill. So that's what I was doing. I was cycling around. And eventually, like after a few weeks, I was like, there's no way.
How heavy was it roughly?
How heavy is the fridge? A chest fridge.
Genuinely?
It was a chest freezer you could turn into a fridge. And all these. It was an ice cream thing. Because I thought, I wanted to do everything right. And that's a really big flaw for me, that I always want to do the right thing and do things as they should be done. And I thought you always had to keep things, which you do, keep things chilled. Mm. Chilled food, chilled. And which you don't really. For delivery, you don't. Like none of the Deliveroo drivers do. They could put them in kind of insulated boxes, which I eventually got after a month. Mm. I got one of those boxes.
A fridge, a full fridge. So it was run off a battery or something, was it?
You charge it overnight.
Wow.
Yeah. Intense.
And you were the only one cycling them. Yeah. You were cycling around. God, right, okay.
In the middle of winter. It's like the worst winter ever.
You learn quick though when you make a mistake like that.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And I eventually got someone else to kind of help me out with the deliveries because I was just so tired. Mm. But, so it was like the big thing about that early business was that some days you have 50 orders, you have 50 lunch boxes going out, and then other days you have one.
Really?
Some days you have zero.
Where were you finding the orders? Because this is probably before Just Eat and Deliveroo. That was probably before.
It was actually the same time that Deliveroo went to the market.
Okay.
So my kind of thesis was that I was bringing this restaurant, healthy restaurant quality food that you would find in a place like Sprout or Save a Food. Save a Food was the big thing. It was just there on Crane Street.
Yeah.
To direct to your office, right? But then bloody Deliveroo started, and they started doing what I'm doing. Sure, I'm not a chef.
Like, they started doing it at that scale.
Yeah, and a much better value than I could ever do it. So I was trying to compete with them. Well, they were trying to compete with each other really aggressively, and
in a massive loss-making market as well. They're quite happy to throw money at it just to get a market share.
And I didn't have the money. Wow, and I never made a cent off that business.
Wow.
Lost a fortune. Not a fortune, but like to me, it was
relative.
Someone's about nothing.
Yeah, it's all relative. Yeah.
And I suppose there was a lot of flaws there. There was a lot of things that were going wrong. And I think at the time, the business was very much similar to what we're doing right now, in that every time you bought one of these meals, we donated a meal to a child in the developing world through our charity partner. So I'm still working with them today. And every version of the business I've done, I've worked with them.
Even back when you were...
Yeah, since then. So that was the... I always wanted to... So it's really important for me to have some sort of an impact beyond making money. So that's my thing. And so press came quite easily to me.
But that must have been very hard. Just open up on that. That must have been very difficult. You're starting off, you're not making any money, but you still have committed to this.
Yeah, so I think that if you believe in something strongly enough, you can make it work. So there's a lot of... I think that entrepreneurs, this is just my personal view, that entrepreneurs have a responsibility as people who are creating value to have an impact beyond making money. And I think it's really, really easy to do if you want to do it. And so I've talked and discussed and had lots of meetings in the early days before I started with lots of different charities about ways to do this.
Mm.
And originally I started working with a charity, it would be like a cash donation per sale, and it would go into like no interest or low interest loans for cooperatives in developing countries. And then I met the guys from Mary's Meals and realized the cost of a single meal for a child in a place of education, and it just made so much sense for me. So like I'm very transparent about how much it costs. It's 7 cents.
Okay.
Is how much a meal costs. So it's like, it's a local meal. So I'm not sending feed over. Okay. It's basically I send over the cost of a meal, and then they then assemble local ingredients.
Okay.
The beauty
What's
of
it called?
Mary's Meals is the charity. So it's a Scottish headquartered charity. They have an office here.
Okay.
They feed 1.4 million children every day.
Wow.
And really what I loved about it was the idea that every time that the kids, these are really, really poor families. And often the kids are sent out to work to bring some sort of resource back into the family.
Right.
And because there's food available in the school, they then get sent to school to get fed.
Okay.
But because they're in school to get fed, they also get an education. And then that education is this ticket to move out of this, right. potentially this ticket to move out of the cycle of poverty.
Okay.
To go that little bit further down the chain than their parents were able to do because they've got this gift of education.
And where do they work? All over?
All over, yeah. Okay. They start off in Malawi. I think that's where a lot of their feeding projects are concentrated, but they're everywhere. They're in Syria now. They do incredible work, and like 97 cents for every euro that's donated goes straight into the projects.
Okay.
So they have really low overheads, which I love. They operate out of a shed in Scotland. I have a lot of time for it, and it's just something that aligned very much with what I want to do.
So from day one, you started working with them, even though you weren't making money yourself.
Yeah, but I built it into my costs. So right. it was you know, you have packaging, you have ingredients, and you have donation.
Right.
It's not. I never wanted to do, and I'm not like throwing shade at anyone here, right? Mm. But I never wanted to do a whole percentage of profits thing. I think there's a lot. There's do whatever you want, and there's merit in that too. But I know that startups don't make money.
And there's a lot of accounting to be done before you get down to the profit.
Exactly.
We all know
exactly.
that.
And there's lots of ways to minimize your profit for lots of reasons. And so I didn't want it to be tied to profit. I wanted it to be something that was direct. So that when you're a customer of Feed, you bought a product that was 100% going to deliver on a meal. 100%.
Mm.
And so that was really important to me.
That's amazing. So then you were out delivering, you hired someone to help you deliver, were kind of coming up at the same time.
Yeah, but I mean, it wasn't a business that was going to go anywhere. And
when did you come to that realization?
I'd say I was about six months into it.
Okay.
And because we'd gotten all this great press on social media and everything, it looked, everyone was like, God, Shane's doing great.
Yeah,
Well done, Shane.
Flying.
Yeah. Wow, we're so proud of you. You're so impressive. So it was my first business, and a lot of my own personal ego was tied up in the success of the business.
Mm.
And this business was tanking, but it didn't look like it.
Yeah.
But if you saw on the inside, it was not a business.
Yeah.
It was a really expensive hobby.
Mm.
A really expensive hobby.
Yeah.
And actually the ultimate cost was actually my own health, because I allowed my own sense of self-worth to be tied so tightly to the business that when that was failing, I was failing.
Yeah.
And it broke me, essentially. It was probably the lowest point in my life, that period up to the point where I made a decision to close it down.
Mm.
I was thinking things that I never, ever want to think ever in my life.
I think it's hard, though. Look, I've been there as well. I've closed down businesses. I think it's very difficult because it's inevitable. Like, you've come up with the idea, you've had the bright idea, you've taken the plaudits when apparently it was going well, and you are wrapped up in it, you're identified to it.
Totally.
It's just at what point can you remember when you decided, right, not doing it anymore?
This has to stop.
Yeah.
I suppose I have to say that around this time I was also being really self-destructive.
Mm.
So I was doing things that I could use, I could rationalize the failure in my head, say, oh, well, I went out last night.
Yeah.
That's why it's a failure. Mm-hmm. I found myself in lots of situations where, looking back at it now, were definitely self-destructive. And I was the worst version of myself at that time, purely from a self-destructive point of view, I think.
You look for a release as well. I think you're looking for
I was running away from it.
Yeah.
I was really scared. I was really scared. I didn't know what was going on. I was working on my own. I had no one to share these problems with.
Yeah.
No one at all.
Yeah.
No one to talk to about it. None of my friends had businesses. No one really got it.
Mm.
And I didn't have
on the surface, they think you're this.
Yeah.
You're nipping off to Monaco there at the weekend. Shane's flying and like literally, yeah. So even and it can often be hard to admit that to others as well.
Yeah, and I think I never shied away from there was always a version of the truth that I was telling people. I was telling people that it was hard, but they'll, you know, your friends are always like, yeah, you'll get through it.
Exactly.
You'll be great. You've got this.
Yeah.
Rather than what I wanted someone to say is like, run, get the hell away from this right now. And I suppose what happened was I dragged myself to the gym one day just to try and clear my head. Mm. And I was at a point where I was locking myself in a studio. So I didn't want to see anyone. I didn't want to talk to anyone. Mm. I was doing burpees or something like that. And I just erupted into tears.
Wow.
I didn't know why.
In the gym.
Yeah. Didn't know why. So I kept on doing burpees. Oh. These tears like streaming down my face. I was like, what the fuck is going on here? And so I eventually grabbed my stuff and I ran home and I texted my mom. And it was probably a Thursday. And I said, are you at home at the weekend? I need to talk to you. And she said, yes. So I went down. And as soon as I walked in the door, my mom said, Kieran. And he came out. They knew. Like, they knew something was off.
Yeah. Well, if they knew when you were in the hotel.
Yeah, they knew.
At least they knew straight away.
Yeah. And they said, what's going on? And I told them everything. I told them everything that was going wrong. I told them all the things that I was thinking about. I'm very familiar with the dark place, but this was the worst I've ever been.
Mm.
And they said, there's no business worth risking your health for. Pack it in, move home. No shame.
Mm.
It's done. Just like they asked me, like, what now could make you feel better? And I said, if this all goes away,
mm.
if I just walk away from it. And they said, look, I had borrowed a bit of money from them. Now they tell me that was a donation rather than a loan. And so they said, don't worry about it. You know, there's bigger fish to fry. Yeah. This is not that big a deal.
Did that feel like a release?
Jesus, like nothing else. It was absolute freedom. I probably skipped back to Dublin. And I shut it down in 3 days. I just closed the door. That was it.
Yeah.
And I suppose I spent about 9 months working on getting myself back on track.
Okay.
Right? So I ended up going on antidepressants. I was seeing a therapist. I was doing, you know, I was focusing on my own health on a number of different spectrums just to try and get myself to a place where I could think about my next move.
Mm.
But of course, because I'm always thinking about my next move anyway, I was already working on the next business.
It's a blessing and a curse.
Yeah.
I think you're talking about entrepreneurs born and made there. I think it's a blessing and a curse because you often... I had this thought the other day myself. I was like, oh, I wonder, should I take just a week off and just decompress? But I was like, you're going to be thinking the same stuff anyway.
Which probably won't be the best idea yet.
You know what I mean? Because it's relentless. You have this voice in your head and I don't even realize it's there now. It's just constantly going, having this, like, having a conversation with yourself 24/7.
I wish this wasn't something that's innately in me.
Yeah.
I wish, like, because I'm pretty smart. I'm not tooting my own horn here, but I know that I'm pretty smart. I know I could get a great job.
Mm.
I know I could be earning a good salary. I could probably have a mortgage if that was something that I wanted. I could probably be ticking all those boxes that someone in their late 20s is ticking right now, like all my friends are doing.
Mm.
I could, but I know I'd never be truly happy.
Mm.
And that's sometimes really annoying because I know that my life would be so much easier in terms of financial strain and stress and pressure.
Mm.
If this wasn't something that was non-negotiable for me, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, I get it. You know, look, preach to the choir here.
Yeah,
you know, it's interesting when you meet people like that. It's just I think it's just in you. I love that debate about are they born or made. I think it's innate in a lot of people.
Yeah, there are.
It burns you up. Like I could never do a job.
I don't think anyone would hire me anyway now. But
that's what I said to my wife the other day. I was like, I could just don't hire people anyway. It just wouldn't work.
Yeah.
I wouldn't hire myself. So like...
I do think that some people fall into entrepreneurship by accident.
Mm.
They're not... It's not...
Necessity sometimes.
Yeah, some people, it's just something that they have to do. Mm. But I think for a lot of people who follow an entrepreneurial path, it's a burning desire that they just can't ignore. Mm. I always say, if I'm ever talking to anyone, I will say... I mean, I think I sometimes feel it's my duty to tell people how hard the path is. I'll often say, like, don't do it unless it's something that you can't imagine yourself never doing.
Yeah.
Otherwise, get a job and live a really happy life.
Because it's quite sexy now. It's super sexy
it's
to be an entrepreneur.
Trendy,
it's super sexy to have, like, Instagram account and to be having your business. And
yeah.
It's quite not that it's easy, but it's easier to set up a business now, a business in
the barrier is like, you know, a lot lower, some sort of business. Yeah, absolutely. But I think there's a lot more.
But as you know, a successful business and a business are two very different things.
Yeah.
So how did you make up the decision then to go again?
Well, actually, before I packed it all in, Feed 1.0, let's say, this is the lunchboxes, I was starting to look for avenues to grow that business beyond the direct consumer delivery thing, because the market for that in Ireland is tiny. It's really small. It's Dublin only, and I was doing vegan lunchboxes, right? So the market for that at that time was even smaller.
Yeah.
And it's not something that I could export because the shelf life was 3 days, even less. Plus, it's a model that already exists in all the key cities all over the world. It wasn't unique. It was just unique to Dublin.
Mm.
And I had come up with this idea of extending the brand into retail. So putting the products that I was making for delivery into shops. So I did an accelerator program, which kind of gave you the tools to that you need to get a product into retail. Then it all fell apart, but I continued with the program. Didn't tell anyone, so it was all kind of hush-hush, let's say. What was going on in the background was all hush-hush, but in front-facing, it was still the business as usual.
How do you mean? So you were...
I was doing this accelerator to develop this retail product
for
one of the supermarkets. And that was kind of an extension of an existing brand.
Right.
But I didn't tell the program managers on the accelerator that I had just shut down this salad box business.
Gotcha. Yeah.
So I was kind of it was a long program. It was about a year, I think.
Okay.
And in that time, I got myself together. I developed the recipes. I found the manufacturer. Rebranded all that kind of stuff, and then I felt okay, I'm ready to do it again. It was good timing. It was just when it was go live, let's say, in the retailer, I was ready to go again. And so I moved back to Dublin again.
Okay.
And launched Feed 2.0 and ran that. It's a mediocre success for, I think I launched it in about a year, I'd say. Yeah, it was about a year. It was a chilled pot, let's say. So it was like we're doing right now, the food that we're doing right now, we're in a chilled format, so a 30-day shelf life. Essentially like a really delicious, nourishing meal in a pot. You just pop it in the microwave for 3 minutes and you eat away, happy out. And I got that into Super Value, I got it into Dunn's and a number of different independent stores around the country. And I was still doing it on my own, but I wasn't making it. I had someone else that was outsourced the production.
Okay.
Which is a wonderful thing.
Is that difficult? I often look at, you see brands explode and they seem to come from nowhere, but as your story explains, it's difficult. But like, is that a difficult process to find someone to manufacture something, to trust them, to give them exactly what you want? Is that a long process?
It's the single biggest challenge for food companies in Ireland right now, without a shadow of a doubt.
Okay.
Finding, the only way to scale is to outsource manufacturing. If you think about it, if you want to scale big, the amount of investment required to set up a manufacturing facility, get all the accreditation, the equipment, pay a team to make it, that money, in my opinion, is much better spent on building your brand awareness or getting people to buy the products, but you've got it all tied up in equipment. I believe that the only way to outsource, the only way to scale is to outsource. And if you look at all of the big Irish success stories right now, let's say like Fulfill, Strong Roots, Sam Dennigan, Strong Roots, Fit-Hit, like these are massive global companies right now. The biggest success stories that's come out of Ireland in the last few years, I'm probably forgetting a few, but they're the ones that really stick out to me.
Mm.
None of them produce themselves, and I ever have. I think it's the only way. I think it's the only way you can scale in a big way. I had a little bit of help. I was working with a mentor who introduced me to my original manufacturer.
Okay.
And it was working. It was fine. It wasn't amazing. There was some quality issues, like purely because it's not my food production isn't my forte. It's not my area of expertise, and I don't think it was his either, to be honest.
How do you like, okay, I'm gonna make this whatever it is, let's say it's chili con carne, say, right, okay, it's chili con carne, you've the recipe in your head. Do you sit down with them and do test batches, or what way does that work?
So like, you make you make your technical specs. You make, it's a recipe essentially with all the steps. You'll bring that to your manufacturer, and then the most important part is that your manufacturer does something similar, so it's not a big departure.
Gotcha. For them. Yeah. Okay.
So they have the right equipment. Yeah. They have the right filling equipment, all that kind of stuff. You bring a recipe to them. Generally, sometimes you sign an NDA if this is like some proprietary stuff. Mm. I was just making food. There isn't like.
Okay.
And then you test it on their equipment, because when you scale up recipes, often there's going to be some challenges there. It isn't a very difficult process. The most difficult thing is to find the right manufacturer, because a lot of in the early days of kind of the advent of artisan food startups, a lot of the big manufacturers were playing ball, and they were taking on the small brands and helping them to manufacture, sometimes buying equipment, and then the small guys went bust, and so the big guys got burned. And so that's why now a lot of them are really shy to work with the small guys, because they've learned.
Yeah.
Which is valid.
It's probably very little money initially as
exactly,
well.
Exactly, yeah, because as the small guys, we're really tight on margins, because everything for us is really expensive. The economies of scale don't exist yet. So I had found this manufacturer, and I had actually got a listing on my own. Now, I was doing pretty good, and I got a listing in a third Irish supermarket through my distributor at the time. And so I needed to scale up. This was a big deal. So I'd found another manufacturer. I was moved from the small guy to a big guy, and I hired a guy, Elliot, who's working with me now still, thank God, my saving grace, to be honest. I'd hired him, so now we're really professionalizing this business.
Yeah.
So it was Christmas 2017, and January was like the big time, right? We're gonna throw everything we've got at this. We're gonna be in 250 stores. It's just great. And then January came, and I called the manufacturer, just like, are we all set for next week? Our first production run, it's really important. I hadn't produced anything now since before Christmas. So we're starting to see some kind of gaps on shelves, things I needed to start.
Is this your first production run with them?
Yeah. The first production run was coinciding with the first delivery to the new retailer. And then they said, we had a few discussions, and we are not absolutely sure that we're going to move forward with it. I said, sorry, I thought you said that you weren't sure that you're not going to move forward. He's like, yeah, no, we discussed it. And that I think we're going to move away from outsourced manufacturing and focus more on our own stuff.
Wow.
Looking back at it, now I know that the business was actually sold. Or it was in the process of being sold.
Right, so but stuff completely unrelated to yourself had just come out of the blue.
I didn't know that then.
How long had you been negotiating with them, or how long had you been getting set up?
About 2 months.
Oh.
And I left small guy, right?
I was going to ask you, had you burned your bridge with the other guy?
I left him, and I didn't burn any bridges. I almost never burned bridges.
Yeah.
But it wasn't somewhere I could go back to, because they didn't have the accreditation I needed for the big guy, and I was having some quality issues. I wasn't comfortable with it. Because now we're on a bigger scale. So I'm now paying a salary to someone who had taken this huge risk in joining this startup. I sold him his big, shiny vision. And he moved up here, rented an apartment. And the arse fell out of the business. So for about 8 weeks, I was searching and searching and searching for a manufacturing partner to take this project on. Desperately, and I was willing to at that point make a loss just to get stock on the shelf, so, and then give me some freedom to find someone else. Looking for like an interim solution, just couldn't find someone.
So your inventory is running down all the time. You're in these stores.
It's gone already.
It's gone.
Yeah, it's gone.
But what happens when it's gone? Do you potentially lose your shelf space? Do you potentially lose your listing?
I got delisted by everyone. So just that was it. Then the I had no retailers. I had no business. And I'd started a few months previous to that. I'd started the Foodworks program. Now it's an accelerator of sorts. It's for high potential food startups with aspirations to be big global Irish exporters.
Okay.
I luckily got on that program, because it has been an amazing help for me. And they were helping me find the manufacturing partner, but even they couldn't find one. And this is Board Bia, Enterprise Ireland, and Chagas. It's run by the three state agencies, and they still couldn't find one for me. And I was looking myself as well. Literally, pulling every contact I could find to try and get someone to make this product. Very, very, very frustrating because I'm now at this again.
So you had customers, you had all the stuff lined up, and you just couldn't get the product.
Yeah. Soul destroying. Really soul destroying. And so one day, I suppose I was very aware of a lot of these big food brands that had launched around the same time that I originally started with the salad boxes. So people like Proper Corn, Sam Strong Root has started, a number of other, like, what are now like the big FMCG success stories in food. And I was looking at them and I was, what do they all have in common? They have a great brand. They have a good product, often really good, but not always. And they have a great founder. And I was like, I've got all those.
Just no product.
But the other thing that they all had in common that I didn't have was that they were all, they all had extended shelf life. And the vast majority of them were ambient, which means that they have a 12-month shelf life and they can be stored on a shelf and not in the fridge.
Right. Okay.
And that is...
Yours was chilled at this stage.
Yeah. So it's been chilled supply chain. You had lots of production runs, like small production runs, because you wanted the longest shelf life possible to be on the shelf. And then, like, kind of like divine inspiration, if you believe in that kind of thing, one day I was walking down through a supermarket to get to another part of the supermarket. I walked through the baby food aisle. Now, it's not an aisle I'm familiar with at all. I'm not at that stage of my life yet. And I glanced over to my left and I just saw all this amazingly well-branded, well-presented product. And I started like examining it a bit closer, and baby food is all natural. There's no additives or preservatives. It's all organic, like really high quality. Like, parents don't want to put rubbish into their kids, but they're all sitting on the shelf and they all have this long shelf life. So kind of light bulb moment goes off in my head, and I grab a basket and I spend, I think, €84 on baby food that day.
Brilliant. I love stories like this.
And I went up to the checkout and I went straight out to a food technologist in Chagasco who I was working with, or who I was kind of aligned with as part of the program, the Foodworks program. And I said, how the hell are they doing this? And I'll never forget this moment. She was like, oh yeah, that's really simple. It's just this process called sous vide or retort. And I said, okay, is it possible for my product to go through that process to extend the shelf life? And she was like, yeah, absolutely.
Why did no one tell me this 6 months ago?
Literally, I wanted to bang my head against the wall. And like, why did nobody tell me this? Because I'm tearing my hair out here. I'm a wreck. I'm incredibly stressed. I have no business again. And I'm still paying this guy a salary, Elliot, who joined me, being like, oh, it's just about to happen, it's just be ready, you know. We're like planning what we're doing as part of Foodworks. Is you do a business plan for, and you're kind of, that's the,
you're back again at the business plan.
But this time it's a bit different in that I have
dusting it off.
But we're doing a lot of work for that business plan and how we're going to take over the world in this chilled business, but we don't even have bloody products. So that's what he was working on, as well as myself at the time, while I'm frantically like a duck under the water, trying to figure it all out. And so then it's possible, and I said, I'm doing it. And she said, are you sure? And I said, yes. And so then I took it to like the mentors and a few industry people who I knew, like really established industry people, and I said, I'm gonna go ambient. And they said, you're making a huge mistake. All the growth is in fresh. All the innovation is in chill. There's nothing happening in ambient. The look at the growth forecast, like it's 1%, sometimes -% in different markets. Like, why would you position yourself there? You're just going to get lost. It's going to be a huge failure. And I said, thanks, but I don't believe you. I'm going to do it. And so from that point on, the whole game changed. We said, we're going to deliver on all of the promises that we were delivering on in the chilled product, but we're just going to do it in a really innovative format that no one has done before. And it took us 6 months, and we launched it in December 2018.
Okay.
Almost, it was a year almost, almost to the day since we packed it all in.
Wow.
And since that moment, it's a whole different kettle of fish. I sometimes have to pinch myself with how well it's going.
How, when you launched it, Did you go back to the same people you had been with before? You're like,
yeah,
this time
it's me again.
It's gonna be different.
Yeah, I did. I suppose, just what happened in that year. In that year, so there was about 6 to 9 months where we were actually developing the product. What happened was, I couldn't afford to pay Ellie anymore. I wasn't taking a salary. I never had. And I was working 4 part-time jobs, and my part-time jobs were paying his salary.
Wow.
Because I needed him. We got along really well. He completely got the vision. He gets the business. He gets what it's about. It's not just about a product. It's about so much more. We're trying to do so much more than that.
So you were working part-time jobs external to your business.
Yeah.
To bring money in to pay Elliot.
Yeah, so he'd stay with me.
Wow.
And so what eventually were you doing? I was in a call center.
Okay.
Selling windows and doors.
Lovely. We all need them. Okay.
I was working in a couple of cafes.
Okay.
And I was working on a food tasting panel as well.
Wow.
So, and every other waking hour working on trying to solve the problem in the business, in air quotes, business that I had.
So how did you balance that off? How did you find, I think that's a lot of entrepreneurs struggle with. When they're trying to, a lot of people ask me, should I quit my job and then start my business and journey? I'm like, no, keep your job.
Yeah,
do it on the side.
I quit my job 2 years previous to that. Mm. So I hadn't had I had lots of part-time gigs and, you know, like casual work to try and keep my head above water.
Mm.
So I've had no money now for 2 full years,
mm,
almost 3. Balance-wise, I think everything was planning. We weren't selling.
Okay.
So the business wasn't up and running. We were just planning it again.
Mm.
So we could do it. I could plan at nighttime. You know, there was no one calling.
I know what you mean. Yeah.
It was very doable. But I had to cut all of our costs. Like we had to get down to zero because we had no revenue coming in. And I got a couple of grants from a few of the state agencies to help fund like the development, that kind of thing. And I suppose the most important thing was calling Elliot's salary. And so I kind of sold him where we're going. And initially there was a little bit of trepidation because of what all of the experts had said.
Mm, of course, yeah.
But after a conversation, he completely got it. And I think what's really special about that is that the whole way along, he's had nothing but faith in what I've been doing.
Mm.
I think that's really important when you're working with people who trust you and are motivated just to achieve the goal.
Yeah.
So we had a friend from the Foodworks program, Killian, who owned Larkin's brewery out in Wicklow, Killian Fahey, and Elliot's background is in craft beer sales in the States. He worked with Carla Brewing Company over there, ran their kind of Midwest sales from Chicago. And so I said to Killian, any chance you're looking for a sales guy part-time? Because that's what he's very great at. And Killian said, I actually am. And so then Elliot ended up working with Larkins for 3 days and getting a salary for that. And then me for 2 days, and I was paying him for those 2 days. Plus I gave him equity in the company.
Mm.
Just to stay, hang in there. We're going to make this work.
Wow. So you both put a huge man on the line to make this work.
Yeah. Like. Yeah, both of us have. Yeah, yeah. Mm. Definitely. I can never underestimate what he has risked. It's not his business, right?
Yeah. Now we talked about entrepreneurs who just can't see themselves doing anything else, but to ask someone who's working with you to take on your lifestyle,
yeah,
and to take on that, like, in that flexibility of like 3 days here, 2 days here.
And live very frugally. Mm. Like, he's the same age as me. He was 28 when he started.
Yeah.
So. You know, when a lot of your friends are buying houses and going on holidays 5 times a year.
Especially in the economies like it is now.
Yeah.
People are making a lot of money
in
a lot of tech companies
spending,
and things like that. Yeah.
And when you're then back to less money that you're now, your disposable income is less than you had when you were a student.
Yeah.
That's tough.
Mm-hmm.
Particularly if it's not your business.
Yeah.
So I really appreciate the sacrifice that he's also made for this.
When you were then launched.
Yeah, we launched it again. We launched it with, we found a manufacturing partner.
Mm.
The great thing about this business is that the machinery that we use to extend the shelf life naturally, it's called a retort, so sous vide. So basically we put all the ingredients into this pouch, we seal it, and then it's cooked in the pouch with hot water for about 90 minutes. So it kills all the bacteria and maintains all the freshness, close to perfection.
Interesting, okay.
That machine doesn't exist in Ireland. So we then had to look externally to Europe mostly. We looked in the States as well, but just trying to get a feel for what's going on.
Yeah.
And manufacturing companies on the continent are a world apart, in my experience, in terms of professionalism. And they're just a joy to work with. So we found one company. So it's like we had, at this point, right, we had a website with, that represented us as this chilled company that already existed, that was having great success. And so we were sending kind of like decks to these different potential manufacturers with like who we are, what we've done.
Right.
Not ever saying that we're now not revenue generating.
Yeah, you can't go in and buy anymore.
This is our next chapter, the next string to our bow.
Yeah.
And we got samples sent by a number of different manufacturers. One really stood out in terms of quality and in terms of the likeness to what we potentially wanted to do. We got the samples on Wednesday. We tried them on Thursday morning. We sent them an email to say that we loved them, we'd love to meet them. And we were on a plane on the way there on the Tuesday.
Love.
In Holland.
Love.
And the managing director of that company picked us up from the airport, drove us back to their office, went into their boardroom. This is the managing director of the company. Went into the boardroom and he pitched to us. So we had a great chat, kind of getting to know each other. And then he pitched to us why we should choose him.
Okay.
And then we pitched to him why he should choose us.
Yeah.
And we were there for about 5 hours in the boardroom, just kind of talking, you know, obviously about technical things and commercials, but also getting to know each other and trying to show what we were trying to do was so much bigger than just this small Irish thing.
Or were they making something similar?
They are making something similar, not the same proposition. It's very much like a side dish.
Right.
But they do have the machinery, they do have the capabilities.
So they knew what it was all about.
Yeah, they produce 53 million units a year. So
wow.
It's not the biggest, it's actually maybe a mid-sized manufacturing facility, but they got it. He got it. And I think what really stood out to me was the fact that in that 4 or 5 hour period, he didn't look at his phone once. He didn't answer any emails. He left the room to get like a lunch for us. He said they fed us and then dropped us back to the airport that afternoon. And I was really struck by that because it's very rare at the time I didn't even run a business. It's very rare that I'll sit down with someone for 5 hours and not look at my phone. I just felt like it was really respectful.
Especially after coming through such a hard time, you're probably like,
and having prettied,
someone believes, someone takes it seriously.
Yeah, and I felt like we had a really good connection. And we have a really good working relationship. But from that moment, I knew that I wanted to work with them.
Yeah,
and so they then produced prototypes for us based on recipes that I had another chef make for us. We loved them, got a few tweaks done, then we got the packaging made, and then I suppose the downside to this is that, the process to be effective, you have to produce in large quantities. So we were talking about like 10,000 units per SKU, so like per flavor, and we had three, so that's 30,000 units.
Okay. Is that a minimum order?
Yeah. So that's a huge amount of money for people who have no money. So as luck would have it, we had just pitched for the Competitive Start Fund, the Enterprise Ireland.
Yeah.
It's kind of early stage fund. It was my fourth time pitching and I got it. Thankfully, because without that money, we wouldn't have been able to pay for the production run. Now I had to get another loan from my parents, which was a real loan this time. And I paid them back like a bank. I'm pretty strict about this one.
Fill me once.
So I did have the balance.
Okay.
But without the 25K from EI, we wouldn't have been able to pay for it.
Okay, so it was that tight.
Yeah, and I got it. So all this time, like we had bought the pack, we had arranged for the packaging to be made.
When did you learn it was going to be 30,000 units? Did you?
Oh, I knew.
You knew.
I just didn't know where I'm going to get the money from.
Right. Okay.
And then a week before, the money landed in the account.
Isn't that so similar? A lot of stories there. Yeah.
And we paid for it, and then the stock landed here. We flew over to Holland for the first production run because it had been such a hard journey, a hard year to get to that point that I wanted to make damn sure that this was actually happening.
That's cool.
And I wanted to watch the products fall off the production line.
Because that's beautiful. Yeah, I love that.
I just needed something tangible in my hands, because we hadn't seen really anything. We hadn't touched anything. It was all prototype.
What did that sound feel like when you saw the first packet come out? Like, what?
My initial thought was I was racked with anxiety, because we had a 20 store listing. That's all we had. We had no other listings. Okay. And I have 30,000 of this product that I have to sell now. So there was like this moment where I said, Jesus, this is great. We did it. The initial moment we walked in, they had set up like all the products beautifully placed on the boardroom table. Oh, and they opened the double doors and the light was coming. bouncing, angels were singing. And we kind of had, it was like a little bit emotional. Like, Jesus, we did it.
Yeah.
And we hugged it out, and we tried the products, and we touched the packaging for the first time.
Is that your first time?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Because the lead time was really long, and they just arrived and they were produced within a couple of days. And then straight away, I my first thought was, we have so much work to do.
So you had 20 stores.
20 stores.
How much product roughly did that equate to?
20 stores.
Mm. So that first order.
A couple hundred.
Really?
A couple of hundred units. Okay. 30,000 of them.
So did they ship over all the units to
everything? On pallets, yeah. 17 or 18 pallets.
Where did they go?
I had a warehouse in Galway, because it was the cheapest warehouse I could find. And I stored them all up there.
Wow.
And then myself and Elliot just went out and sell. And the 20 stores grew to 40 stores to 60 stores. And 7 months ago now, jeez, it feels like a fucking lifetime.
Mm. Even when you're describing it, it feels like a business that's a lot older.
And that's what, we started off in 20 stores and now we're in 250.
And 220 to 250 in how many months?
Seven. And we've sold just under 100,000 meals.
Wow.
So our donation, in August we'll hit 100,000. So in August we're going to make our 100,000 meal donation to, so we made our first donation in April, which is 20,000. So by April we donated 20,000 meals. So actually, between April and now, we've grown massively and really fast.
What sparked that?
The growth?
Mm, that's phenomenal growth, to be fair. In 7 months, that is overnight success territory. Like, even though you've been out 4 years, that is phenomenal growth.
It depends on your expectations, Gary. Depends where you set the bar. It is. It's not lost on me how fast we've grown.
Yeah.
It's not lost on me. Because, you see, I'm very much in the trenches of it.
Of course, you look at the numbers every day.
Yeah, it's difficult. We do sometimes. It's very difficult for us to stand back and really take stock of how far we've come.
Mm.
I suppose a really big key for us was where we position the product in store. So what all of the advisors said at the very beginning about the ambient category being a last cause is true. So if you look at the ambient meal category, it's where pot noodle are.
Right. Okay, that's good. Soup, a good analogy.
That
kind of stuff. Yeah.
That's the aisle.
Right.
So that's where we naturally sit.
Mm.
It's not. It's a center of store aisle. It's not an aisle that's shopped very frequently by our customer. And we said, if we go into that aisle, we won't survive.
Okay. I'm looking at the packaging now, so it's, how would you describe it to people? I'll put it in the show notes anyway. How would you describe the packaging? It's in a sachet, is it? Or what do you describe that as?
A pouch.
A pouch.
Yeah.
So it's a pouch. It's about how many grams? 400 grams.
So weighty,
mm.
very heavy. It's a full meal in that pouch. So we worked with a dietitian who kind of informed the optimum macronutrient profile for us that would kind of deliver on satiety, so fullness,
gotcha.
Rather than, and as opposed to kind of making you feel tired.
Right.
So sustained fullness over a longer period of time.
Yeah.
But what we just wanted to give people was something really easy, quick, and delicious.
Mm.
And we definitely deliver on that.
Mm.
So we kind of bill it as the ultimate in convenience. We're not trying to replace home cooked meals. We're not trying to replace your salads. We're not trying to replace fresh meals.
Mm.
What we're trying to give you is the option or a solution to the problem that you have when you get home from work at 10 o'clock at night.
Mm.
You're wrecked. You've nothing prepared. You've nothing cooked. Your options are you order a pizza or you eat a feed. That's when feed comes into its own.
I think if I live down in Grand Canal and there's a fresh there, I spend way too much money in it. But I expect to see that in the fridge, I think.
Yeah, so that's...
If I walked in, I think I'd be like looking for that. They have a big snack aisle.
Yeah.
It's just packed with sushi and soups and stuff like that.
That's the key insight for us. So we looked at our customer and we said, where is she shopping right now? And what's the need? The need is hunger. She needs something to eat. Mm. Where is she shopping? If you're hungry, you're going to go to the fresh aisle and you're going to get a ready meal. Mm. So we need to be there because we don't have the resources or the time to build up a strong enough brand awareness to drive people into a category that they don't currently shop. Now, our ultimate goal is to disrupt that category. We want to create a new healthy meal category, and that's our long-term goal, and we're going to do that. If you think about like the frozen category in grocery, 5 years ago, frozen was dead. There was zero innovation. There was nothing happening. It was flat growth. It was full of legacy brands who just weren't innovating. Then came the challenger brands. Mm. So people like Strong Roots.
Strong Roots have blown the doors off it, haven't they?
Absolutely.
They're absolutely phenomenal.
I really admire that. I kind of look to what they've done as a blueprint for what we can potentially do in a different category. So people like Strong Roots came along. They innovated. They really connected with the customer. They met a very real need. Mm. And they've succeeded like no other. And so the way we kind of pitch it is that the ambient meal category is the next frozen.
Okay.
And what we want to be is, let's say, the next Strong Roots in a different category.
And where did this end up then?
So we discovered that we don't have the resources to do that yet. Mm. And so we need to get in front of our customer as cost effectively and as quick and easy as possible. So we merchandise it in the fridge.
Okay.
We're not trying to... We've been very open about the fact that it is an ambient product. Mm. And it's a selling point for us because you can
absolutely
put it in your...
How long will this last?
12 months.
Hands. Okay.
That's a year from production.
15th, 2020. Right, yeah. So that's huge. Yeah.
So you can keep that in your desk drawer. You can keep it in your locker, in your gym bag, in the glove compartment of your car, in the cupboard at home, wherever. Wherever you think you're going to need a meal, just keep it there and have it. It's always good to have one around. But we knew to get in front of the customer, we need to put it where she already goes. Mm. So we merchandise it in chilled. And we look at like the chilled ready meal section, not as a place where you put chilled short shelf life products, but as a place where you go to find products to make you not hungry anymore.
Yeah.
So so that's why that fits there. Mm. And we had a real, real challenge getting that across to retailers and buyers. And we still have it. There's still stores where they refuse point blank to put it in the fridge, even though we'll say your competitor store or comparative store down the road, we're selling X amount of units per week from the fridge. Here, we're not in the fridge and we sell 20% of that. They just don't get it. And that's fine. You can't. We can't expect to win everywhere, right? But a big win for us was our listing with Tesco that we just launched in there in June. And we had been sending this particular buyer kind of updates and samples in like these aluminium pouches and like unbranded concepts and kind of drawings and all this kind of stuff for about 9 months before. Yeah, so literally from the day we decided we wanted to do it, we've been sending ideas.
Okay, so even before you had the packet in your hand, you were pre-selling this.
Yeah, and he said, listen, I love it, but it's not for my category. Like, I'm a fresh buyer.
Okay.
I do chill products. Mm. I'll give you the details of the guy who does chill products. And we kept chipping away. And 9 months later, we were going to an event and we knew he was going to be there. And we sent him an email a couple of days previous with kind of our updated sales data, like money talks, right?
Yeah,
so we're saying, this is the amount of stores we're in, this is our rate of sale, this is how many units we've sold. We'd love to chat to you. And he replied and said, really interesting, I'll meet you at the event. Mm. And he walked in the door, we spotted him, he walked straight up to us. He said, I love it, I really want to list you. Just like that. Because we've proven ourselves at that point.
Yeah,
we've proven
built
it through
it
the
up
channel.
Slowly.
And we've proven that people will buy it in the fridge.
Mm.
And he had seen, I think, this is what we were talking earlier about the press machine, and he'd seen things about it.
Yeah.
You know, popping up on his Instagram stories, other people trying it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you started about 6 months ago, you guys started popping up on, I think it was my LinkedIn, and you just kept popping up again and again. I think I interviewed someone and they mentioned you guys. And it's just when you slowly start to hear, yeah, it starts to bubble up.
And it worked. And so he said, yeah, I'll start you off in 40 stores. We said, amazing.
Mm.
Fantastic. In the chiller, in the fridge, in the ready meal section of the fridge.
You wanted to be, yeah, okay.
It was a golden ticket for us. And then we started supplying. And then like 2 weeks later, I had planned like my first holiday in years. It was my birthday, and I said, I'm gonna go on holidays for this birthday.
You've jinxed it. You've definitely jinxed it. Like,
and I came back and we got the numbers. I said, let's kind of get the rate of sale data. I just want to, how are we doing? What do I need to do to manage it? And I looked at the store list, and he had put us into 75 stores.
Oh wow.
So it's half the full estate.
Okay.
So now we're like half of the Tesco stores all over the country. So we're in like stores from Letterkenny and Donegal, all the way down to West Cork, Kerry.
Even in Limerick.
You finally made it. Yeah, which was...
I'd say that was surreal, though, walking into your home Tesco and seeing it.
Yeah.
That's cool.
I think seeing it in a store where we hadn't physically put it on the shelf was great.
Mm.
And like, there's some stores where we have like 9 facings of the whole shelf full of the product. It's a really special feeling to see it there. And then sometimes to walk into a store and to see like empty cases and people buying it.
That's amazing.
And we have someone text me yesterday. She was minding some kid from some friend's kids or some friend of her parents' kids or something like that. And she opened up the press and she's found like seven pouches in there.
Amazing.
And she asked the kids like, oh, do you like this? She's like, yeah, we love it. We eat it all the time. My mom loves it. She eats it all the time.
That's amazing.
And yeah, like we did. There's a few like moments that have been really special, that, like where you're kind of like, you know, the whole time, the whole way along, you're always going to have your supporters and your family and friends are great, and they're going to try the product and buy it if it's decent quality. So it's a given that you're going to have people that you know who try it.
Yeah.
But it's really special when random people,
strangers,
no tie to you at all, are paying money, like money, for something that you created. That's really special to me. Like we did Wellfest, the wellness event in May. It was our first kind of real consumer-facing show where we got to talk to our customers. It was like 15,000 people there we knew.
Was it good?
Phenomenal.
Really?
We were shattered by the end of it. One thing that we took, we sold out, like we sold 900 products at that. Mm. But we were selling them in, we were giving like these branded tote bags with the logo on it. Yeah. We were just looking at all these. Well, we saw everyone in Gym Plus Coffee hoodies. Yeah. The whole place.
Yeah, Nylon a few weeks ago.
Yeah, I like that episode. Everyone was wearing the Gym Plus Coffee hoodie and they had the Feed tote bag.
Love it.
Just walking around. It was such a surreal moment. People were walking up to us being like, oh, I'm seeing this everywhere, or everyone in my office is eating this, or I love this, I have my lunch every day.
People are creatures of habit too. Once they start eating something and start,
it's also very good though, right? Like, it's tasty.
Oh, of course, I can't wait to try. I'm going to try it right tonight.
Just have it, is it?
Hashtag ad. What's next? I'm always afraid to ask. What are you planning next?
Hopefully stay alive beyond the...
That would be good,
...the one-year mark. I haven't made it that far yet.
Yeah.
Any of my iterations of this...
Looking good so far. I think we're there 7 months.
Yeah, I think... Good. I do think, though, in consumer goods, like particularly in the retail cycle, you're never more than 4 weeks away from the whole thing falling apart.
Oof.
Because we pay for our stock up front, and then we don't get paid potentially for 90 days after that for the stock that we sell.
Days.
Yeah, because you're not going to sell it all on day one, right? It's going to be a while.
Of course,
so the cash flow is very difficult to manage. So yeah, we are in a nice place now in terms of volumes and growth, but in terms of cash coming in, it's very, very different. So you've got to really balance that. So the big goal is to still exist in 6 months' time.
Mm-hmm.
And then straddle the two ideas of grow sustainably and be really bullish and grow aggressively.
Okay.
So I'm trying to figure out what's the sweet spot in between that. So we could go away now and raise €500,000 potentially. I don't know if we're ready for that yet. I think having other people's money in your business brings a lot of pressure. And right now, all I want to do is execute. And I think that I still have a lot of things to prove. We're still a very young business. Like, we're not even 8 months old yet. And yeah, our traction in the market is great. And I'm really, really happy. And I feel really lucky. I think we have a lot more to do. And if I can hang on for another 6 months before we invest, before we take on investment, I think maybe we could probably fare better in the long run. I'm not sure yet. So we're talking with investors. We're starting down that path, but I'm trying to figure out what's the best way. What's the best thing for the business, if that makes sense?
Yeah.
I think establish ourselves really strongly in Ireland. We're already exporting to the UK. We started exporting to the UK in April with Ocado.
Okay.
And it's performing really well. But like, the UK is a completely different ballgame again. I think we haven't even grazed the tip of the iceberg in terms of what we can do in Ireland. And I think sometimes...
That's exciting though, to know that you've huge scope to grow here and then also simultaneously just start to grow in, especially when you're with the multiples like Tesco.
Yeah, I think there's real potential there, Brexit permitting. There's still huge potential here. We still have a massive opportunity. So, I mean, that's where my reservations come from. We have created, I think, this huge opportunity. And it's only going to be a matter of time before someone else comes in and wants a piece of it.
I know.
So do I raise loads of money and throw everything I've got at it now, straight away? Or do I kind of go a little bit slower and chip away at it for a little bit longer and then throw everything at it? I'm not sure yet. I don't know if there is a right answer. I think I've worked on this for 4 years now, right? I've worked on it for a long time. This is my baby. I want to do justice by it, but I will not put myself in a position ever again where the business comes before me. Like, I had a meeting with someone recently before I went away on holiday. So I went away for a week, right? I didn't go away for a lifetime. And he said, "Oh, what are you doing for the weekend?" As I was leaving, and I said, "I'm going away on Monday, so I'm just going to work for the weekend in advance of that, so I can relax a bit." And he said, "Oh, enjoy that. It'll be your last one for a while." And that really struck me, because as committed as I am to the business, and I'm obsessed with it, I'm utterly obsessed with it, I'm also like in the prime of my life, and I want to also have some... I'll never have balance. I don't think that exists when you're in this kind of a game. But I do want to have something else to my life that isn't the business. And I think when you have investors' money and other people involved at that scale, I think it becomes harder to take those moments and step back a little bit. And so as a startup, behind the scenes, it's a mess. You know, right? It's not this slick professional thing. And I think I'm slowly trying to show people the reality of what it's like.
But the more people you meet, and the more people and entrepreneurs I meet, and the more successful people that I would call successful, you always realize everyone's making it up as they go. Yeah. Everyone's just trying to figure it out.
Yeah.
Everyone, no one has it perfect.
Yeah.
It doesn't exist.
No, I don't think so. But I think that part of the reason why I started the business in the first place all those years ago was to kind of have the control that I can build this life for myself. I'm not massively interested in being incredibly wealthy, but I am very much interested in having the freedom to make choices and having the freedom to go for a swim at 3 o'clock in the afternoon if I want to, and work on a Saturday and take a Tuesday off.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? I want to have that.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I totally
get it that startups at this stage require a lot of work and a lot of attention. I'm just not 100% sure I'm willing to sacrifice my entire life for a business, which if the business gets taken away from me tomorrow, what do I have left?
Yeah, absolutely.
So like a couple of months ago, I had this thought where I was like, Jesus, is this business all I have? Because I think during the course of this, I lost a relationship. I lost a lot of friendships. I wasn't able to give anyone my time. I wasn't able to kind of give any attention to anybody else or a piece of me to anything. And I think sometimes what the casualties of that are some friendships. People just can't handle it or think that you're being ignorant of them, or but you're not. You're just like trying to work on something. People don't get it. And I lost a relationship. I think a big part of that was that I just couldn't commit to the, I couldn't give the attention to this person. And I felt like if this business gets taken away from me tomorrow, if something happens, what's left? Do you know what I mean?
But you've learned the hard way as well. You've been through this.
I think it's very easy then to forget about that and then to just to go back down the same path. So right now what I'm trying to do is just have little things that are not related to business.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I'm good at, like, I work out a lot. I take time for myself. But beyond that, what else? I need to make more time for my friends or do more things that aren't part of my routine. Do you know what I mean?
And it's a decision as well. It's a decision to box off that hour because if you don't, it'll just get swallowed
up. I have to be intentional about it.
Yeah.
And I think one of our big messages around feed is kind of being human and acknowledging the fact that you're not perfect. Yes, okay, we all want to live this great life. We're all on this path. Every single one of us is trying to be better in some way, right?
Of course.
We're all trying to, whether it's in fitness or education or health or career, whatever. But at the same time, we're all human. And you have to rein yourself back in sometimes to say, okay, I need to be more intentional about this, actually. So, in a roundabout way, yes, there's potential for us to raise loads of money right now. It's just very recently, in the last couple of weeks, I've started to think that maybe it's not the right time for us to do that, because I don't want to be under some sort of, or feel under pressure to meet someone else's targets.
Yeah.
When I know I can reach those targets my own way. We probably will grow slower, but...
But 6 or 7 months ago, if we were sitting down having this chat and I said this to you, this is going to be your decision, you'd probably have snapped my hand off in a heartbeat to get to where you are now. So in a way, it's more money, more problems. You know, and more stuff, more problems.
Well, listen, like, actually, our problems are all great problems to have. Right? People say that to me all the time, and I kind of get a little bit anxious and say they're still problems.
It's all relative, like we talked about earlier. It's all relative.
But I think, like, our problem isn't that people aren't buying it. Our problem isn't that people don't like it. Our big problem is that we can't bloody make this stuff fast enough, or we can't gather the cash to pay for it. You know, that kind of way.
Yeah.
I'd love to hire someone else to just take a little bit of pressure off us and allow us to do other things besides service all of our accounts and stuff. And that's and it will. And I'm slowly becoming more comfortable with being uncomfortable.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
I think that's the key, isn't it?
Yeah.
There's never like a moment where you're like, to-do list. I was out at a barbecue last week and the chap was saying, oh, it was great, you know. Now, I thought I'd get all my to-do list done by Friday afternoon, but it just didn't work out that way. And I was like, my to-do list is never ending.
Oh.
And I think that's the thing.
I had to do this from 6 months ago still. It's long ago.
I could do a thing of 200 points and I'd have them to do. So I think that's it. It's just come to the realization, it'll get there, but it's never going to be finished.
No.
And that's the beauty. But that's why we set our own agenda. That's why we do our own thing.
Yeah.
So I have 4 questions to wrap up with. So describe a typical day to you, if there is such a thing. Or how do you plan your day? I'm obsessed with kind of optimization and productivity and always trying to get that a little bit more, being more efficient, to give myself ironically more time back, like you're talking about there. So how do you kind of plan your day or your week?
I'm very much a to-do list man. I love a to-do list. I will plan the night before. Like on a Sunday night, I'll have an hour or two. I'll go somewhere out with my laptop, plan out the day, do a couple of things that'll take a couple of things off my list, but it's essentially plan my week. And I often find that if I don't do that on a Sunday, my Mondays are just a little bit messy. It's also impossible to plan exactly how the day is going to go. But for me, I've become a morning person. Like when I was younger, I could stay in bed till 1 o'clock in the afternoon. But in the last couple of years, I've very much become a morning person. I love to get up at the crack of dawn. So 6 o'clock, 6:30, I'm out the door. I get up, get out the door. I work out because I find that my brain is sharper when I do some sort of movements in the morning. And I try to get to the desk at 8:30. We're in a co-working space, can get a little bit noisy. So if I get in there a bit earlier than everyone, between 8 and 8:30, then I can get some things done and have a nice bit of focus. And then there's things I do every day, like invoicing, kind of begging people to pay me. you know, a little bit of social media work is an area that we're not amazing at. I'd love to be better at it. A lot of logistical stuff that we have to organize, like get send pallets to places, make sure the right orders are going out to different distributors. A lot of bloody paperwork and admin stuff, which
that's the side people never see, though.
It is not fun at all. I'd love to be out there building something, or do you know what I mean? Or
that's the side people never see. There's some days I sit down, I'm like, what did I do
today? Yeah.
Honestly, like, I look back, like, I spent the whole day doing admin.
Yeah.
But it has to be done.
Yeah, that is
paying your P30s, getting your VAT, you know, getting all that done, dealing with your account. Like, all this stuff's so key.
Yeah. It's important. And if you didn't do it, it would be even more of a mess.
Comes back to you tenfold.
Yeah. And I'm right now, I'm trying to kind of look forward and say, okay, where are we going to be in 6 months' time? What do we need to do now to get to that point? You know, yeah, do it. And then I invariably stay at work until 9 or 10. So this is another bit of a bugbear of mine, because
that's quite late. Like, that's a long day.
Yeah. So I'm single. I'm young. I don't have anywhere to be, or anyone bugging me to be home, which is a bad thing, because I think that my time isn't as effective as it could be. So I'm trying to work on that at the moment. So like, leave a little bit earlier, leave around 7 or 8.
I think there's a point where you stop being productive.
Yeah. And I know myself, really those last 3 hours I'm doing nothing, but I kind of feel like, I'm there.
14-hour day today.
Yeah. You know, the martyr. But yeah, I'm trying to get better at that. I'm in bed for 11 o'clock. I'll begin at 6.
It's a long day.
Pretty boring, actually.
So you pre...
Wow, I feel sad.
Yeah. So you pre-plan your week, and then do you pre-plan further out than that? Do you do quarters?
Not really, no. I'd love to.
Suppose where you are now.
But there's also so many unknowns that we play with as well.
Yeah.
There's so many things, you know... We can forecast the cows come home, but it's not always going to happen.
Mm.
So we have obviously long-term targets and milestones we're working towards, but they're a little bit loose.
Mm.
So we know we want to be in that retailer around that time.
Okay.
We know we need to. I know I need to get cash to pay for that order in 6 weeks' time, and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But I think the ultimate goal, we know in 5 years' time, we know where we want to be. But in between, there's a lot of like... unknowns. I think it'll always be like that, to be honest.
Yeah.
Especially as there's two of us doing everything. We deliver, we run this business as two people. There's a lot of work involved in that. It's a small team, it's a lot of pressure.
It's huge.
And so it's difficult sometimes to sit down and to have someone working on marketing and someone working on NPD, you know, like, and I do all that every day. A little bit of new product development. So we have 3 new products launching before the end of this year, plus a whole new range that we're working on, which is really, really exciting, like a kind of a game changer product. We're working on that. And then, you know, marketing things, we're kind of lining up events for September, December, January, you know, that kind of thing. All that gets done every day, but it's done by one of the two of us, as opposed to like someone working in a department, whatever. So
soon,
yeah.
Finally, I ask people to recommend a book every week. So all people got to do, we'll give away one copy. So all people got to do is to tag myself, yourself, and feed on social media, share the episode. So what book have you read in the last 4 or 5 years that's had an impact on yourself personally or on your business?
I used to be a massive reader. Less so now. I've been reading Sapiens for about a year and a half.
I always want to try read that. It just seems too daunting.
It's weighty.
Yeah.
It's a weighty one. I'm actually trying to... a friend of mine bought me a book because I want to read a fiction book to escape my brain.
That's what I do last thing at night. I always read fiction last thing at night and non-fiction first thing in the morning.
Nice. I think that's really clever because...
I just have to just go into another escape. World.
Yeah, there has to be. I don't do that enough. I read an interesting book recently... No, it took me about 9 months, but it was called The Rules of Life.
The Rules of Life. Oh, yeah, I know it actually.
A friend of mine gave it to me. I just thought it was an interesting one on just how to be a good person. Things that you already innately kind of know and understand yourself.
Yeah.
I thought it was good. I read... I used to love kind of psychological self-help books. Now I mostly consume audio. Like, I listen to a lot of podcasts, like a ferocious podcast, maybe 3 or 4 a day.
Wow.
A lot of podcasts.
That is a lot. I love podcasts, but even that's a lot for me.
Yeah, I listen to a lot. I just love audio.
Okay.
I think it's good because I can listen to audio while I'm cycling around and I'm going somewhere, if I'm cooking.
if you're heating.
Yeah, that kind of thing.
What podcast actually? So the book we'll give away is The Rules of Life. What podcast actually? I always love new podcasts.
I listen to a nice mix. So there's a lot of businessy ones, a lot of CPG food aligned ones, like Brand Builder is a great one for me because it kind of follows the big American success stories.
Brand Builder.
A great one. I love that. Like the classics, like This American Life, Serial, you know, the true crime ones, you know, like Who the Hell is Hamish?
I listen to that, it's very good. And Live and Die in LA is excellent.
I don't know that one.
A friend of mine, Jen, put me onto it during the week. It's excellent.
Really?
It's
really I love those
Neil Strauss, the author, is behind it. It's
The Shrink Next Door is what I'm listening to at the moment.
I haven't heard that one, actually.
Lots of businessy ones. So I listen to, like, in the mornings, I listen to the Monocle, The Globalist, which is, like, just news. Give me a bit of news, because I don't see news from Wednesday to the next.
Okay.
Yeah, like lots of. I have about a rotation of about 30.
Okay.
You
need a mix, though.
I think.
Like today, I was coming in and I just wasn't in good form, and I was like, put on the Peter Crouch podcast.
Okay.
Because it's light.
Yeah.
And it's funny. Whereas I might.
Oh, my dad wrote a porno. Have you heard
that good? No. I've heard so many
people. The single best podcast I've ever heard in my life.
Okay.
The only thing that I listen to that I'll erupt in laughter.
Really?
Yeah.
You need that too. Incredible. Especially audio. Audio is so intimate.
I think there's four series for you to get through. So
okay, brilliant.
Get through that in a few weeks.
Crack on that.
That is my biggest recommendation.
Okay. We'll put all these in the show notes, actually. Brilliant. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
And that's it for episode 22. I really enjoyed that chat with Shane as he broke down how difficult it can be at times to get a business off the ground. And you'll often have to go through a couple of different variations of it before you actually nail what you're trying to do. If you want to win a copy of the book Shane recommended, The Rules of Life, we're actually going to change it up this week to be in a chance to win the copy. Simply leave us a review on iTunes and just ping me over a screenshot of the review you've left. It would really help to get the podcast noticed by more people. So just leave us a review on iTunes and ping me over a screenshot. You can do it on social media or you can do it in a DM or whatever you like. That's it for episode 22. Thank you so much for listening. If anyone has suggestions for guests, just shoot me a DM or shoot me an email. A lot of people got in touch in the last couple of weeks with great suggestions, and it really helps to bring a broader mix of guests to the podcast. Thank you so much. I will see you next week, Thursday at 6 a.m. as usual. Have a great week.